Welcome to our three of today's 9 till noon show. Just one or two comments before we go to our next caller. Ireland should pull out of the Eurovision, but don't put the decision on Bambi Thug. Too much pressure for a new young artist. The governing body must be told we're not going. Another caller says, of course Ireland should pull out of the Eurovision. There are, however, some contrary views. Russia mounted an unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. Israel reacted to an invasion of their country by Hamas, who are the democratically elected government of Gaza. Why aren't people like Mary Coughlan not on the streets demanding Hamas return the hundreds of hostages that they have taken? Another caller says, I'm sick of listening to people condemn Israel. Who started this on the 7th of October with the Palestinians? They've been sending rockets into Israel for years. Israelis would live in peace if it wasn't for that. Caller says, personally, Donald, I don't really like the Bambi Thug song for Eurovision. I think it's horrible, but I still think they should be able to perform. Not performing will make no difference at all. That's another comment there. Now it's time for our Wellness Wednesday spot. And this morning, delighted to go to Zoom and welcome Dr. Mary O'Kane, who is a lecturer in psychology and early childhood education. Mary, very good morning to you.
Morning, Donal. Lovely to speak to you.
And you too. You've just written a book, Mary, Anxious Children in an Anxious World, Facing Fears and Finding the Brave. You believe this is potentially going to be a very important resource.
Oh, Donal, this book, I've written a book in the past, but this book is very close to my heart. And in fact, I was delighted this week. It's actually reached number one in the Irish bestsellers list nonfiction. So I was over the moon.
Congratulations.
And thank you. You know, Donal, that reminded me how badly needed the book is. Funny, Donal, the levels of anxiety in our children, from little ones right up to our teens and young adults, are huge at the moment. There was a really important piece of research by a lady called Professor Mary Cannon, and this was pre-COVID, and she found by the age of 13, one in three of our children have struggled with their mental health, and anxiety was the biggest issue. By the age of 24, half of them have, Donal. So that was prior to COVID. I'd imagine those figures would be higher now. But they really resonate with me. Donal, I have lectured for decades now. I won't say how long, but in the area of psychology and child wellbeing. But I am a mum of three, and one of my children struggles with anxiety. So that figure, that one in three that's always quoted, really resonated with me because I'm living it.
Yeah.
And I know what it's like to feel so disempowered when your child is struggling.
A lovely quote is, sometimes our job is to protect our children from the rain, to be the umbrella providing shelter. But more often, our job is to remind them that they're brave enough to withstand stormy weather. And that's the subtitle of the book, as I said, is Facing Fears and Finding the Brave. That this isn't telling young people, you know, where to go for the answers. In a sense, what you're telling them is, look, you may not realise this yet, but the answer is within you.
Donal, that's it. And you know, parents, to give parents the same message, Donal, anxiety is disempowering. So it takes all the power away from the child, but it does exactly the same to the parent. And I know that from experience. And it might sound really counterintuitive to say, I wanted to write a positive book about anxiety. It's like, you know, no, that makes no sense. But it really is, because that's the message. That's the whole idea. Facing your fears and finding this bravery that we know they have within them. But also for parents to realise there is something you can do. You might feel, oh, what am I going to do? There's nothing I can do to help. But actually, that's not true. If you understand what's happening in their brains, what's happening in their bodies, and you, if you have that background, that understanding, then you realise there's actually so much I can do to empower them to get out into the world. Don't, we can't remove anxiety. And this whole idea of the stormy weather, on my cover, Donal, is an umbrella and wellies, because that's my whole thinking. You know, as parents, I know it myself, you want to swoop in and you want to be that umbrella protecting. Now, sometimes that's important that we do that. I mean, I get that. But more often, Donal, what do we really want for them? We want them to know, no, you know what? You can put on your welly boots and you can get out there and dance in the rain. You have it in you to do that. So a lot of what I've done in the book is sort of tried to be very practical for parents. And look, this is what you can do to enable them to do that, because it is what we want for them.
And it must have been difficult for you as a professional, you know, to suddenly find yourself as the parent, because it's one thing to have academic knowledge. It's one thing to know all the theories and to be able to cite reports and books and academic papers. Yeah. It must be another thing to suddenly find yourself in the situation and yes. Oh, hang on a minute. This isn't theory. This isn't academia. This is real.
Yeah, Donal, that's exactly. And I mean, I'm not alone. I mean, there are so many parents, and it doesn't matter in your professional life what you are. That doesn't matter. Anxiety is affecting so many of our children. And you see, it's the emotion then. It's the emotion you feel. What we want is to be the port in the storm for our children. But when they're feeling anxious, it doesn't matter who you are. When your child is feeling anxious, it brings up all this emotion in you. There's a story I tell in the book, Donal, and it's about chickens, okay? And it's a man called Lawrence Cohen. He's a clinical psychologist in America, and he tells this story. And he, when he was about 18 or so in high school, he did a study on chickens. In humans, we talk about going into a state of fight or flight, but chickens freeze. It's tonic immobilization, it's called, when they're under threat. And he did this study with chickens. So he gave a chicken a fright. He had it in a pen, gave it a fright, and he was timing how long it would freeze for. And the chickens would usually freeze for between 1 and 2 minutes when he gave them a fright. So he sent them into this anxious state. But then he frightened the chicken. It froze. He put a second chicken into the pen. Didn't frighten the second chicken, but the second chicken took a look at the first chicken, mm-hmm. and it was as if it thought, oh my gosh, there's something really bad here that he knows that I don't know. So the second chicken froze, and they froze for about 5 minutes. Donal, I always, when I heard that story, I thought of parenting and me, mm-hmm. and one of my messages to parents is don't be the second chicken. It's funny, Donal, when I heard that story the first time, I thought, but I'm not a really anxious parent. But when I thought about my child who struggles, I parent her in a more anxious way. So I became the second chicken. I'm really related to it. And I think most parents do without meaning to, out of love, Donal. When we see them anxious, we become anxious.
And then
that's
we feed
not what
the
they
anxiety.
Need to see.
And we feed the anxiety. You say there are three strategies that parents can follow, three things parents can do to support their children. And this obviously is going to be the core of the book, but can you talk us very briefly through those three key points?
Yes, so there are three phases, if you like. And the first one, and it has to be first, is what we call psychoeducation. And that basically means understanding the brains. And I've explained it in really simple terms in the book. What is happening in your child's brain, okay? Because anxiety comes from a good place in the brain. It's this little place called the amygdala in the brain. It's like our body's internal alarm system. It's trying to keep us safe. But for some children, it's as if that little place in the brain is oversensitive to danger. Then after we've educated ourselves, so I talk parents all through it, the impact of the brain, the impact it has on their bodies, then it's self-regulation, because we can't take the anxiety away. We can't just remove it. But instead, I go through all these different strategies, and they're very individual. Parents can pick and choose what works for them and their child, but strategies to help them self-regulate. And then comes the facing fear and finding brave. And that bit is talking to parents about how they can gently push their children outside their comfort zone. We know they have this bravery within them, Donal. Donal, children who are anxious are brave every day. But some children, getting up in the morning and getting into school is an act of bravery. It's hard for them. So they have it within them. And really, for us, it's about really working out strategies to show them this, they have this bravery, and to help them baby step by baby step move beyond their comfort zone.
A few questions have come in, and this is an interesting one. Are children more anxious these days, or are we now just able to put the term of anxiety on children, whereas years ago we didn't have the label? Now, I mean, I'm thinking back to when I was in school. I always had butterflies in my stomach on a Sunday night. Because after the weekend, I knew I was back to school on Monday morning. And it wasn't just laziness. I always had that sort of, Jesus. And it was there. Now, maybe these days we're putting a name on it and writing books about it. Back then it was just, grow up and go to school.
Get on with it. Yep. And funny, don't you say that? One of us gets anxious, as you say. You know, think about, I'm sure people, they might be doing their driving test next week. Oh my gosh, you're going to get anxious. Say a best man speech. Mm. You know, it's talking in public. All these things, we all feel anxious. Anxiety is normal. It's absolutely normal. But for some of our children, it's moved to a different level. And I think you are right. I think years ago, some of our children really struggled. Maybe they dropped out of school and it, people just said, oh, whatever, they dropped. But actually, underneath was this anxiety. And I think today, although we have the name for it, it's really important that we're, instead of just saying, ah, get on with it, or letting these children just fall under the radar, and they don't learn in school, that we think, no, there's stuff we can do to really help them and to support them. And think about childhood, Donald. I mean, it's a time of firsts, and firsts make us anxious. Like your first swimming lesson, your first sleepover, you're a teenager, your first crush, your first kiss, you know, these are good things, but they make every one of us anxious. So it's so normal. But really, this book is written not only for the kids who really struggle with anxiety, but for the oversensitive children, the children who are so sensitive to the world around them. It's also about resilience. You know, every kid can do with realizing the bravery they have within them. And we want them to be strong and capable and resilient. So really, I think the thinking behind the book is good for every child, not only the ones who are really struggling.
Yeah, again, a comment, I mean, there's an 8-year-old boy gets so anxious before school in the morning. He's crying, has stomach pain. We've spoken to the teacher. That doesn't seem to be helping. I mean, what would be your advice there?
Now, this used to be called school refusal, you know, which a term I hate. It's school anxiety. And yes, that's exactly what it is. It's the thought of going to school has built up this level of anxiety with the child. And the goal here is you can't just force them in. You push them in, just make them go. That won't help. That does something we call flooding. The brain is flooded with anxiety. Instead, it's those baby steps. So you really need to think about regulation. What does he do when he feels this way? Normalizes. Yes, sometimes it can be scary going into school, but I know you are strong and capable. But he needs tools. So he needs the tools to self-regulate. It could be even just deep breathing. I go through all these different ideas, your sensory items, things like body scans really help them regulate when they feel that way, and then baby steps, supporting him to get in the door. But it can be done, Donald. It absolutely can be done.
Do we make a mistake by trying to find logic in anxiety? Because from my own experience, I think sometimes I get anxious and I know logically that it's not, you know, now, and I know, I mean, there's an intellectual part of my brain is saying, logically, this is not the case. Everything is going to be fine. This will happen and that will happen and that will. There's another part of my brain going, yeah, right.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, I mean, and in us looking at other people's stories, we hear them speak to us about what triggers them and we're like, not a strand. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Whereas what triggers us, they might have the same reaction.
Yeah. Donald, you know, I wouldn't consider myself a particularly anxious person, but I am terrified of heights. And sometimes when my child is struggling and I'm thinking, so say school, and I'm thinking, why would you be scared of school? You love teacher. Yeah, go get in the door. And that's what my logical brain is telling me. And I have to remind myself of what I feel like if I'm up on a cliff face with my children going on a cliff walk and the anxiety builds inside me. So I'd say to any parent, if you're thinking, oh, this is ridiculous the way they're carrying on, We all have something, don't know. We all have something. And when I remind myself of that fear, and it's irrational, like I know my child is not going to fall off the cliff, but does that matter? No. Inside my brain, my amygdala, this part of the brain, in my emotional brain goes, phew, and the fear, I feel adrenaline going through my arms. My heart starts to pound. My arms feel shaky. That's what our children are experiencing every day. For example, like that little boy who's struggling with school. He's feeling the same as I feel when I'm faced with a height. So there's nothing rational about it. And being rational and logical with the children doesn't help. We have to go to the underlying emotion. That's how we help.
And when we talk about butterflies in the stomach, that is a physical reaction started by the medulla in the brain, as you've said.
Absolutely. I mean, that person who texted in about their child feeling those butterflies, not feeling well going to school, that he's really feeling those feelings. Those feelings are real. Like your heart is genuinely pounding. Your arms are feeling shaky. You have those butterflies in your tummy. All those physical feelings are real. And you can imagine, as an 8-year-old, That's scary. Mm-hmm. It is really scary. This is what I mean about educating. It's not only educating parents, it's educating our children. Because when you sit with that eight-year-old and you talk to them about this little fella in here in the middle of their emotional brain and he's trying to keep you safe, but sometimes he's just thinking, oh, school might be scary, and he sends all these responses around your body. When you actually start to really break it down and talk to them, but actually, that's less scary now that I realize it's this little fella in here, the amygdala, trying to keep me safe. You know, having the conversations, Donal, so important.
Mm. And as you say, communication, but not communication in a way that's judgy, and certainly not communication in a way that's telling people to get on with it.
Oh, no. Genuinely, that doesn't help. You know that old thing, you know, throw them in the deep end. That actually came from throwing kids in the deep end of a pool to try and, you know, teach it to swim. We know from, you know, what we did back then that that doesn't work. It leaves you even more fearful. It's baby steps. You know that saying, you know, a comfort zone is a beautiful place, but, you know, nothing ever grows there. Mm-hmm. Like for our children with anxiety, there's a real danger that they want to avoid everything that makes them anxious. They want to go back. They want to retreat often to their home, their safe mm-hmm. space. They feel safe there going out into the world. Mm-hmm. We don't want that for our children, Donald. And pushing them too hard is only going to make them feel it's more scary. It's baby steps out of their comfort zone, and we know it works. Is that particularly when we are bringing down our own anxiety, like we're the port in the storm, we're that calm, collected adult with them. We talk in psychology about one good adult, and that's what they need when they're anxious. They need to know that we are calm and that we believe in them. We have confidence in their ability to cope. And that's kind of reassuring. When this part of the brain is thinking, oh, this isn't safe, if they see our face looking like, ooh, look at them, they're looking at us thinking, look at her face, I'm right, it's not safe. What we want to do is we want to be calm and confident and let them know that the world is a safe space for them.
Yeah. So basically the main takeaway from this is don't be the second chicken.
Donald, that's exactly it. I must say as well, if people are wondering, oh, where might I get the book? If they look at www.buythebook.ie, they can get a copy online. When I got on the bestsellers, it was like, oh my gosh, I'm an independent author, Donal.
Yeah.
And I think it's the first time an indie author has ever reached number one.
Excellent.
on the nonfiction. And I think it's because parents are reading it and thinking, oh my gosh, it's working. Like, the feedback has been great. And they're telling other people. It's word of mouth, which is lovely. And that's my goal, that this book is going to empower parents to support their children. That's what I really hope for.
Anxious Children in an Anxious World, Facing Fears and Finding Brave. Dr. Mary O'Kane, a lecturer in psychology and early childhood education, the author of said book, available on buythebook.ie. Mary, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you, Donal.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you. That's Mary there, who is the author. And as we say, the book is called Children with Anxiety, Finding Fears, Anxious Children in an Anxious World, Finding Fears and Facing Fears and Finding Brave. Let's move on to some of your comments before we go for a break. I believe Ireland should pull out of Eurovision due to the amount of people that have lost their lives in the Gaza conflict. The Israeli Prime Minister can stop this. Another caller says the Stardust families should get compensation for the life lost. The manager was able to get compensation for damaged furniture. The families should get compensation too. Caller says, as a granny and a mother, I totally agree with Tony. What more can be done to make the world see that Israel is committing the murder of innocent civilians? Another caller says, the BlueStack service is such a vital service to have in our community, a lifeline for so many families. Wishing you luck in the latest fundraising venture. We as a family will be signing up. Teddy, steady go. Another caller says, I'm in need of help. Is there anyone that has a help for essential shake and shingles? I will just put that out there, certainly. If anyone can help with the essential shake and shingles, and you have any advice, please send it our way for our listener. Another caller says, just listened to Wendy from the BlueStack Foundation, such a fabulous resource for so many families throughout County Donegal. Great fundraisers planned by them with the Errigal Climb and Errigal Trek. Love the option of joining virtually, making it all so inclusive. Well done to all involved, and so say all of us. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We're going to be speaking again about young people in our next piece, because we're joined by Avril McMonagall, who is the CEO of Mosaic Digital Solutions. Avril, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal.
Now, you are going to be delivering a talk to early education students at ATU in Letterkenny later today on a child's right to privacy on social media. And as soon as you mention child and social media, we are walking into a minefield.
Yes, absolutely. Delighted today to be talking to, there's three different ATUs coming into the presentation. We've got Sligo, we've got Galway, and obviously I'm in Letterkenny. So really trying to start this conversation about social media and how it impacts, you know, the consent of young children. We're talking an awful lot now about consent for older children and trying to bring that into the teenage realm. And one of the things that we constantly overlook is a child's consent and right to their own image on social media, because I suppose as parents and as grandparents, we are taking responsibility, we're taking that into our hands to share their images. Because obviously, and this is not about berating anybody, Donal, or about making anybody feel bad. It really is just about opening a conversation, because sometimes we just don't know enough about this stuff. And it's just about getting the conversation going to see, to understand the full implications of what we're doing and what it means for children's rights to their own image and to privacy.
And this can go right back. I mean, we're all used to seeing the pictures. Now you go to a swimming pool or a leisure centre and there's inevitably going to be pictures, no mobile phones in the pool area,
yes,
taking photographs or anything like community games or anything like that. I mean, you know, there's bans on taking photographs, yes, and all of those. But even ourselves, and you gave the example, and I thought, yeah, I never thought of that. A parent or an aunt or uncle or whatever putting up a picture of a child blowing out the candles on their birthday cake.
Yes.
It could potentially,
yes,
be problematic because the child hasn't been in any way consulted or asked if that image may be used.
Yeah. I mean, typically, I mean, obviously my big interest is in early education and it's in working with early childhood settings. And, excuse me, I did a bit of just quick research over Easter where I took at random 15 early childhood services that had been posting images of the children at Easter. So it was various things like the Easter bunny coming into the early childhood setting, you know, children showing off their Easter arts and crafts, different things like this. And across 15 settings nationally that were just picked randomly that have open public Facebook pages, so that's not locked down with any privacy, that's open to the world to see, there was 550 images of children with full facial profile. Now, what's happening there is, and even you mentioned the birthday cake photograph. That is the one that you will see an awful lot, you know, happy birthday. But what people need to realise is the metadata that is connected with that picture includes you're basically telling the world, you're telling the world this child's name, you're telling them their age, i.e. their date of birth, and their location. Three very important pieces of metadata. You then match that with the already lots of data, because of data breaches, the number of social security numbers and information that's on already on the dark web, you have a perfect recipe for identity fraud. And what we're starting to find now, and what research is starting to find, is that some children are hitting their maybe 18th, 19th birthday. They're applying for credit for something for the first time. Could be a mobile phone. And they find that they've got a credit history because they have been a victim of identity fraud. And that's why children's data and children's pictures and information about children, dates of births, locations, are so, so valuable to perpetrators of cybercrime, because it's what we call clean data. It's data that's got no... I mean, if somebody looks at my data now, it's got when I bought a toaster in the 1980s somewhere on it. And, you know, you will have, you know, everything. I have a, you know, you and I will, yeah, have, you know, a digital footprint, let's say. Children don't. And this is why it is so essential that we start talking about children's right to privacy of their own data and their own image.
Now, that's interesting. That is interesting, because I would never have thought of that. I mean, to be honest, like most people, and, you know, be honest, if someone says we're going to be talking about social media and children, the first thought people are going to have is, are photographs going to be used, or are images going to be used in a sexual way, or is this going to be used by paedophiles? And that, yeah, that's the first thought that comes to our heads.
Yeah.
But you're saying, you know, that obviously, and we always have to be conscious of that danger. But that's not necessarily the primary danger. danger when it comes to posting photographs of children online.
It's so complex, you know, and there is so much more. Yeah. There's so much more. And I mean, just on that one, piece of research by the Australian Children's eSafety Commission looked at one dark website, and it contained 23 million images of children, all that were taken from family social media. Now, obviously now with AI and all the different things that we can do, I mean, all we need is like a facial profile, all we need, you know, so it's really about not berating parents or grandparents or early childhood settings for posting images. But if you want to share an image, we all want to share images of our children. We want to show, we don't want to show off and we're proud of them that they've achieved something. That's only natural. But what we now must realise is that the old family photo album that we used to have in our house is now exposed and open to the world, because that's the nature of where we are. So if we do choose to share images of children on social media, take them from a certain position. You know, we would urge early childhood settings to take images of children working from above, that you can just see their heads and their hands. There's no need for their faces in these images. Stop the birthday pictures that are identifying dates of birth and names and locations. Because even on a simple level, you're also talking about that being a huge challenge and a huge risk for parents who may be fighting custody battles, for parents who may have children that are at risk of abduction, and there's a few high-profile cases in the media at the moment, and also even for domestic violence. All these things are revealing information that we've no need to reveal.
You yourself have been working in the context of your position in Mosaic Digital Solutions on developing an app to address some of these issues.
Yes, I brought forward an app. The Mosaic Educator app is an app that is used, and I'm glad to say, by the majority of early childhood settings in Donegal. We're extending our national reach now. We have settings all over Ireland using it, but this is an app that I brought to the market 5 years ago through my business, Mosaic Digital Solutions. And what it does is it's an encrypted communication app that early childhood services communicate the learning and development and updates of children through an encrypted app that is locked down to parents, that has passed cyber security, and that all data is deleted 1 year after a child leaves a preschool. Because at the minute what's happening is you put stuff up online and it's there forever. Even if you delete it from your profile, it's still there. It's still there forever. So this is a different way of managing child data. And then the parents then can download an app, and they need an encrypted password to get in to see their child's information. And they don't see any other children's photographs, any other children's videos. They just have access to their own child. And that will be the crux of my own business and what I'm trying to bring forward, I suppose, on the back of this kind of conversation here. And it is about raising awareness about the dangers.
And thus the importance of speaking to the early education students in the ATUs right across the ATU region, because really, I mean, the people you're speaking to today are going to be running the early education settings of tomorrow.
Absolutely.
And you really want that level of awareness. There was a time, and indeed there was a case in the courts, I think, earlier this week, or was it late last week, of identity theft, where people would use they'd get birth certs for children who had died at birth or who were deceased, and they would use those details. What you're saying now effectively is people don't even have to do that. They're actually taking information directly off Facebook settings, or it's been gathered and then put up on the dark web. So, you know, it doesn't have to be this dark go for the birth cert of a deceased child anymore. It's even easier than that.
Oh, it's
if
very
you do it cyberly,
easy.
Yeah.
But the problem is, you know, through our own behaviours, you know, we're making it very easy. And I mean, usually we only put legislation and laws in place when something absolutely horrible and terrible has happened. So really it's about, you know, trying to get a wee bit ahead of that. You know, one of the big things that I would advise to both parents and early childhood providers is start introducing the culture of consent to your young children. So even if you're talking to a very young toddler and you want to, you know, share an image or post a photograph or even take their photograph with a camera, you know, get into the habit of saying, is it okay if I take your photograph? Because what we're doing there is we're instilling this idea of consent from a very young age. And even if the child's not old enough to understand that, it will then become a part of normal behaviour, and certainly something that needs to be happening in early childhood settings in terms of consent. and permission? And is it okay if I share this? Even is it okay if I post this on your Mosaic app to share it with your mummy and daddy? Really good habits to be getting into. And these are proactive, ordinary things that we can be doing daily.
What about the situation where, and we see it certainly, and I think you still see it, where say something like first day at school, first communion, etc. Very often you'll open your papers, and not only will you open your papers, but it's one of the weeks they really sell well, because I mean every parent in the country is going to be queuing to buy the paper mm-hmm. when the first communion photos or the first day in school photographs mm-hmm. or the confirmation photographs or whatever are in the paper. Does that need to be reviewed by schools? Now it's slightly different in as much as they're not individual pictures with individual names and individual details.
Yeah, but it really is the most valuable image that you can post on a child is that full facial profile, because with AI technology now, somebody can digitalise that photograph of a four-year-old and make it look like a 19-year-old or a 20-year-old and still keep in the features, you know. So that's what I'm saying about choose the type of photographs. I mean, if you see a child in a class group of 22, 30 children, that photograph's not, like, realistically not going to be an awful lot of use to you because there's too much clutter there. But it's these high-quality, really good images that we're seeing now going up on social media. The example of the ones that I looked at over Easter were all of children holding something, and it was their full profile face with the details. Yeah. And often they're wearing a school uniform, which gives you their exact location.
Avril, it's a concerning and maybe something that we do need to be keeping in mind. As I say, this is something I'd never thought of. Never struck me that people could be actually using pictures online for identity theft. Thankfully, I'm of an age that, I mean, by the time I got onto Facebook, I think my youngest child was 17, so it was, you know, we're of that age. But yeah, it is certainly food for thought. And listen, thanks very much indeed for coming in to talk to us today, and all the best with the talks with the students later on.
Thank you very much,
Tom. Avril, thank you. That's Avril McMonagle there, who's the CEO of Mosaic Digital Solutions, speaking to early education students at the ATU from right across the region. They're coming up from Galway and also from Sligo and other settings as well. And it's an important one and a salutary lesson. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's a Wednesday time for Business Matters, and we welcome in to studio Mr. Chris Ashmore. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Donal.
A busy one this week again, Chris. Lots to get through, and I think we're going to start with a jobs fair for Donegal being hosted in London.
That's right. There'll be a jobs fair on Thursday the 16th of May at the London Irish Centre in Camden in London. It's been organised by Donegal County Council, and the aim really is to target Donegal people living in London and who are maybe looking to return home, or maybe people not necessarily from Donegal interested in relocating to the northwest of Ireland. So there'll be at least a dozen companies in attendance, several sectors: tech, engineering, construction, maritime, healthcare. These companies do have vacancies or are expanding, and it's set to take on more people. So it's a chance for people there to come and see firsthand and talk to the people involved from some of those companies. And there'll also be representatives of the County Council's economic development team there, and they're going to provide, you know, advice on simple little, well, not simple, but things like everything ranging from housing to schools, even driving licenses. Because, mm-hmm. you know, you could have been in the UK the last 20 years and you're thinking, well, I might need my car, what's the story? And things like that are important to get sorted before you come over.
And potentially now with Brexit, there's going to be different arrangements. There's going to be, you know, what pertained 10 years ago may not pertain now.
Absolutely.
Because of Brexit and the fact that the UK is no longer in the EU.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting sign of the times there. Local enterprise office in Donegal organising a trade mission to Birmingham.
That's right. The local enterprise office, along with Enterprise Europe Network. Now, this is a trade mission to what's called the Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week in Birmingham. It's taking place on the 5th to 6th of June at the big NEC centre there. And for Donegal businesses, if you go through the local enterprise office, it's subsidised to a degree. You'll be able to attend 6 shows over 2 days. They're looking for expressions of interest. The deadline is the 26th of April. And this exhibition will have over 10,000 manufacturers, designers, industry leaders. So it's a really big event, and it could be a real eye-opener for people, and who knows what it could lead to.
A big day in Downing's on Friday last.
That's right. A company, the Green Turtle Seaweed Company, they have had their new state-of-the-art facility was officially opened by the Minister for Agriculture, Forestry and the Marine, Charlie McConnell-Logue, and they have the facility there for a 24-hour production process for processing seaweed, and some of the seaweed that they harvest there is being used in a sea meat product that's been essentially, it's a hybrid meat product, and some burgers are going to have 25% less meat. And some of the burgers you could be eating could have some seaweed as part
very,
of the ingredients.
Very
healthy
seaweed,
as well.
Seaweed
yeah.
can be very, very yeah. tasty indeed yeah. At times. Now, other news, and Tata Consultancy Services being awarded a diversity award.
Yes, they got an Investors in Diversity Silver accreditation by the Irish Centre for Diversity. So this is all down to structures that they've put in place in the workplace regarding workplace practices and culture. So good recognition for them on that. And also just to point out, the next Start Your Own Business programme has been hosted by the Local Enterprise Office here in Donegal. That starts on Tuesday the 7th of May. It's a virtual programme. It's over 8 sessions, 2 evenings per week across 4 weeks. And so anybody thinking of or at the early stages of setting up a business, this will help you to plan ahead. The cost is just €25. More details available on the Local Enterprise Office website.
And the Donegal Women in Business Network, a number of events coming up.
Yes, they have a free coffee morning networking event this Friday. Now, they've actually done it that they're going to have 3 locations, so a great opportunity for people to pop along, meet other people. La Papa Coffee House in Letterkenny, the Fairy Glen Coffee Shop in Derrybeg, and the Central Hotel in Donegal Town between 11 and 12. Informal, just getting people together, having a chat, and connections are so important in business. Who knows what it could lead to?
Let's look forward to the Business Matters podcast, which will be available online after this programme, and of course will be broadcast after the 6 news on Sunday. An interesting guest on Business Matters this week.
Yes, my guest is Niall Speak, the founder of the Eco Basket Company. Having experienced sustainable and waste-free shopping habits when he was living in Australia, he returned to his native Sine Mills and began the process to set up his own company. He now has online the Eco Basket, so you can go online. He has a wide range of products ranging from spices to herbs, grains, toiletries, and he has ambitions to be the leading zero waste refill provider in Ireland. So if you're ordering off him, you can buy in various quantities, you can buy somewhat in bulk as well, and it'll be delivered in compostable packaging. And he's also a big fan of the shopping model where customers bring in their own containers, will fill them up with as much of the product, you'll be paying by weight or volume. This, you can see, it's an emerging trend everywhere, and he hasn't got a shop as such up yet, but there are plans, and he's all sorts of plans, a very ambitious guy. And in this clip, he outlines more about the business and how it all began.
I suppose, yeah, the idea definitely would be a shop, but I suppose the initial idea was to set up online, and again, there was no real funds in place, and I have a bit of a knowledge on how to build websites, and I just started out watching YouTube videos on how to work a Shopify e-commerce site. Built the whole site myself, 530 products, and we're adding within the next 2 weeks another 130 products. So that's where it initially started, and because simply, again, you know, we have to build up a bit of revenue before, and build a bit of a community before we can even, I suppose, go and look into retail. We do some craft markets, so obviously at the craft markets, we have a whole retail set up. They're quite affordable, so people can come and obviously get as much as they want. With the online site, we generally have 4 set sizes of products. That's 125 grams, 250, 500, and 1 kilo. And the way it obviously is more sustainable is we use 100% compostable packaging for our products.
And that was Niall Speak. And Chris, for people who think Speak, that's an interesting surname. I've heard that surname before. They very possibly may have come across one of Niall's blood relatives.
Yes, people of a certain vintage will certainly recall his father, Jonathan Speak, former Finn Harps and Derry City legend. Had some memorable seasons, a great goal scorer, and of course managed Harps as well when they got to, they were involved in the 1999 Cup Final. He was a striker of some repute. Mm-hmm. He's still, I think, maybe number 14 in the all-time League of Ireland goal scoring charts. Good. And I think he bagged 29 goals in one season for Derry City, which was quite an achievement. But Niall certainly... he has developed an interesting business. And, you know, we were just talking about one of the things on a really practical basis. You know, somebody buys a little glass jar of parsley that has 50 grams of parsley in it. And you might do this 10 times a year. And he's saying, well, if you buy it off me, I'll give you a kilo of parsley. You can put it into a nice big glass refillable jar with a seal on it. Mm-hmm. You're only doing the one bit of packaging you're reusing. You know, it's just a practical example. And he seems to be onto something.
So it's all online at the moment, but as he said, looking at developing an actual shop front, and we can expect to see that happen presumably in Sion Mills, but then again, we could go next door to Strabane or perhaps a couple of K across the border even.
Yeah, and he also has a premises in Carrick on Shannon, so he's straddling both sides of the border and, you know, exporting, he's UK and Irish markets, and he's also thinking of developing a vertical farm in Sion Mills. That's something for another day.
A vertical farm?
Yes.
It was interesting. I was in Killarney last week, and I'll say this very briefly. I'd never seen this before. They have in a building in just literally in the square in the middle of town, they have what they call the urban farm. And it's got big windows in the front. You can look in and you can see various herbs and various plants and lettuces and leaves being grown, I mean, hydroponically, I think is the phrase.
Yes, yes.
And in the restaurant that we ate in, I was eating Killarney Urban Farm broccoli and kale soup made with broccoli and kale from the urban farm. And as I looked out the window of the restaurant, I could see the urban farm. I could actually see the building that the stuff I was eating was grown in. So, I mean, you know, that was in the
program this week, he does mention about the possibility, and we watch with great interest, of growing pineapples using coconut shells as part of the process in Sion Mills. So watch this space.
Sion Mills pineapple farm. That really sounds interesting. Chris, great as usual. Business Matters, I say, podcast going up online now on highlandradio.com, and it will be broadcast on Sunday evening
after the 6 o'clock news, and you can contact me at businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Chris Ashmore, thank you very much indeed. Before we go, a few more of your comments. Whoever planned the Port Road Polestar lighting, what a disaster, says a caller. Another caller says, I think, Donald, that all the traffic lights at busy times on the Polestar have actually slowed the movement of traffic. Another caller says, I look at that road and I wonder how it's going to work during the Donegal Rally. Now, we got a bit of a preview of that last year because I actually got stuck on the four lane during the rally on the Saturday afternoon. I got it into my head that you'd be safe enough being out on the Polestar Road at about 4 o'clock because they wouldn't be back in from the stages until later. I was grievously wrong, and it took about an hour to get from the dual carriageway to Glencar. And we did have the experience of being on the road on the four lane, and an ambulance came through, and it came through with a Garda escort. And what the Garda were doing, they were getting motorists to go up onto the footpath, and they got the ambulance through. Now, I think there's even more work been done on it since, so I'm not sure if that will still be possible. Another caller says, in terms of this lady doesn't talk about all this sexuality education pushed onto children. They have enough of schoolwork and homework to do. Let children enjoy their child lives. Please say well done to Jason McCall from Molly and Drew. All very happy for him. Thank you. Request for Marjorie Friel Arahira in Fannin, whose birthday is today, from all your friends in the day centre. Happy 60th birthday to a great sister-in-law, Nuala O'Hagan in Remelton. She's one of the people that walks the Wheelie for Life tracks with the purple t-shirt, along with yourself. We're so proud of her and love her very much. Congratulations, Nuala, on the big 60. And that's from Rosaline, from Brendan, from Danielle, from Mark, and from Adam. Another caller just saying, I was listening to Wendy from the Bluestacks Foundation What an inspiration, such a fabulous resource for the county of Donegal. My family were blessed to have found it following the sudden death of my mum last year, leaving behind my beautiful Down syndrome sister, for whom I now care. She'd been reclusive for 7 years, didn't attend any services. COVID destroyed her altogether. This great facility brought her back to life and has given her so much confidence. My family and sister could never put into words how valuable the services Bluestack provide are. We're looking forward to climbing Errigal with them and wish all the best to the Everest trek, and love the option of joining virtually as well. That's from a very, very grateful family. I've noticed that my son and daughter's photos are on Facebook. They post every day and there are visual profiles of the children. I'm not very happy with it. I think primary schools should reduce their use of photos on socials. The group is private, but it doesn't matter. Another caller says, I've raised the issue of my children's photos being taken by the school and uploaded to Facebook for a while now. It's a private group, but all it takes is one person to pass it on. Another one, my son and daughter hate it when videos of them playing music are uploaded. My son is quite private. He doesn't like it. Children often don't have the courage to tell teachers and others not to take photographs. And that's Highland Radio News. No, it's not Highland Radio News for now. It's the Linesville Noon Show for now. It'll be Highland Radio News this afternoon and this evening. But that's it from the Linesville Noon Show. Greg's back tomorrow. As we say, Greg is broadcasting from Genesis Aesthetics in Gwydir, the show coming live from there. Thanks to all our guests. Thanks for all who participated. Thanks very much indeed to Shannon and to Caroline for taking your calls. Caroline produced as well, of course, and as always, guided me through. John Breslin is up next around the Northwest. Most importantly, thanks to you for listening. I'm Donal Kavanagh. Have a great day.